Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Good evening, and here we are in a beautiful evening in Houston, Texas. Welcome to Breaking the Silence, and we just guarantee you the next hour is just going to knock your socks off with the guests that we have this evening. And if you know some people that really wants to sit down and get some good information tonight, call them, tell them to dial into the radio show tonight, and make sure you don't miss it, because this is just going to be awesome. One of the great privileges of being able to have my own show is that I get to seriously, and I'm serious as a heart attack, get to literally talk to some of the best people, the most educated people, the most well-known people in this industry, in the medical world, in the counseling world, and get to present them and just talk to them from my heart and from their heart, just like two friends sitting down having a cup of coffee. And that's exactly what we're going to do tonight with our guests. I hope you had an awesome Valentine's Day. I hope you got all the little presents that you wanted. Hope you had some time to be able to tell your kids and your family that you just love them. It's not just a day for Hallmark. It's a day from your heart to theirs, and I hope you enjoyed that awesome day. In the next couple weeks, we have some wonderful guests that I want to let you know about. Next Sunday night, live, will be Dr. David Paradin, and he's just going to come in and talk about his work and some great information there. And the following Sunday, we will have Brannon Dempsey. And he is the worship leader that we had on a couple weeks ago. He was telling about his own personal story of trauma and abuse. And we got about halfway through the story, and I invited him to come back. And he's going to share the rest of that story 2 weeks from tonight. I always like to start off with something, with just a few thoughts, and some of these are just really, really good, and some of them are kind of goofy, but feel free to jot these down. You always want to have a piece of paper and a pencil when you listen to our program, because I really think that we give you some information that it could really be able to be used the following week. We don't just want to entertain. We want to take everything up a notch for you and provide something of value to you each and every week, so we appreciate you being with us. Couple things I just want to share before I bring our guest on tonight is, have you ever thought about your worth? How much are you worth? And I want you to know, as we go through these four or five different things tonight, real quick, because the guest is just awesome tonight, and we'll get to her as fast as we can, is when in life, sometimes we don't realize, we don't recognize our value. And I just want to encourage you this week to know and realize what you're worth. When somebody treats you just like you're one of many options, help them narrow their choice by removing yourself from that situation. It's not pride. It's called self-respect. Recognize and know your value and what you have to offer, and never settle for anything less than what you deserve. Another thought, try to choose the right perspective every time. Perspective is everything. When faced with long checkout lines at the grocery store, or what we're famous for in Houston is these wonderful hour-long traffic jams, you can get frustrated, you can get enraged, you can get angry. Or you could spend that time while you're waiting, dreaming about something that you're fixing to do. Talk to somebody that you've never met before that's standing in line with you. Find out how they're doing. Or just look up into the sky and look at the clouds. The first choice will always raise your blood pressure. The second choice will always raise your consciousness. Think about that next time you're in a traffic jam. Don't let your old problems punish your dreams for today. The next time you're tempted to rant about a situation that you think ended unfairly or how you were just messed up and overdone with, remind yourself of this. You'll never kill off your anger by beating that story to death. So close your mouth on it, unclench your fist, and attempt to redirect your thoughts. When left unintended, the anger is going to slowly wither away, and you'll be left to live in peace as you go towards a better life. When making decisions, try to always choose the things that really, really matter in life. Some things just really don't matter much, but lifting a person's heart, now that matters. Putting first things first, that matters. The hardest and the smartest way to live is choosing what truly matters and pursuing it with passion. One more, then I'll stop. Accept your strengths and accept your weaknesses. Everybody listening to this program has their own strengths. And you have your own weaknesses. And it's only when we accept everything that we are and everything that we aren't that we're able to become who we are capable of being in the first place. Just some thoughts. Just kind of want to share with you and start the program off. I always like to try to go really deep with your thinking and give you something to dwell on the next couple hours and maybe in the middle part of next week. So just jot those down and hope you enjoyed those. We want to let you know in the next couple weeks also, it's going to be the beginning of March. We're going to be doing another WorldCast event video from right here from my home. And we got some great guests that's going to be with us. And the program theme this time is called The Quest for Hope. And that's going to kind of integrate my new book that's coming out, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. And we'd love to have you in and tune into that video WorldCast. It's going to be going all the way around the world. And we'll let you know more about that in the next few weeks coming up. We just want to invite you to do that and be in store for that. Okay, Douglas, if we have our guest on tonight, we would like to just patch her on in. Now, listen to this, folks. You know, I'm in awe when I read some of these biographies and the little bios of what these people do. Listen to this. We have an awesome guest, Donna Jackson Nakazawa, Donna Jackson Nakazawa. And she is the author of four books, but three previous books, and it explores the intersection. This is going to be so interesting tonight, of neuroscience, immunology, and emotion. Childhood Disrupted was one of the finalists in the 2016 Books for a Better Life Award, the book The Last Best Cure, and another book, The Autoimmune Epidemic. For her writing skills and some of her contributions that led to the field of immunity, she received the AESKU Award and the National Health Information Award, which literally recognizes the nation's best magazine articles on health. She's appeared on, you ready for this? The Today Show, NPR, NBC News, ABC News. Her work has appeared in the Washington Post, Parenting Magazine, AARP magazine, which is the one that I currently get every month, and Glamour magazine. And she's also been featured on the cover of Parade, as well as in Time and USA Today. And she currently blogs for Psychology Today and HuffPost. And it is just an honor, all the way from the wonderful state of Maryland, to welcome you, Donna, to the program tonight. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a great pleasure to be here and talk to you, and thanks for all the important work that you're doing.
Well, I tell you, we didn't even, in this wonderful bio of what you have here, we didn't even mention the book that has just come out, and you're literally burning up the highways of this country, traveling from one city to the next on your book tour. And the title of this book, The Angel and the Assassin. What an awesome title. So that's the one right now that I want every person to just be able to type that out on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or whatever and order you a copy of this, because I know it's just going to blow your socks off. So, Donna, tell me what you do. I mean, do you write for a living? Do you travel? Do you speak at conferences? Just tell me right now, what are you passionate about in life?
Well, I have written six books, four of which you mentioned, and they really do dwell at this intersection of neuroscience and immunology and lived human emotion. And my reason for doing that is both personal and professional. I also write for a lot of magazines and newspapers. I had pieces out last week in Wired magazine and Boston Globe and Stat. And, so I'm a full-time journalist. And also, I speak in keynote conferences all over the country, and that is a big part of what I do. And I also teach. I teach, half days, day longs for continuing education, and it keeps me really busy. And the thing I'm working on always, just motivated by a sense of compassion for the many thousands of people I hear from over the course of my career who are suffering from conditions that we may think of as somewhat chronic, whether these are chronic inflammatory diseases, autoimmune diseases, depression, anxiety, and looking at these from the latest cutting edge research so that I can offer up the right words really at the right time when people are suffering and maybe help close that gap between what we're learning in the research world and what we know in the top labs, where I also spend a lot of my time as a fly on the wall, whether it's at Harvard or UVA, wherever the research that is at this intersection of neuroimmunology and stress and disease, I'm there, and reporting it back and reflecting it so that we can help close that gap between what we see happening, the paradigm shifts that we see happening in medicine and psychiatry, and offering those to patients so that they've just got more tools in the toolbox. That's really my mission.
That's great. Don't you just love being out on the keynote circuit, to be able to speak and then just sit on the corner of the stage afterwards and interact with people?
Well, because of the things that I talk about, and the way that I feel about them, I will often look out over an audience, and to me, whether it's 200 or 2,000, I see a lot of, I don't want to be corny or anything, but to me, these are all people with a lot of lived experience. It could be a conference of pediatricians. It could be licensed social workers. It could be internists. I could be teaching a med school class at a hospital. But everyone comes to it with their own lived story. And once you start to get into this intersection of stress and trauma in the brain and some of this new science, which is showing us, and this new book, The Angel and the Assassin, how we mix an entire area of understanding about how the brain really works in response to the environment and environmental insults, including traumatic experiences. And once you begin to tie these pieces together for people, you can see the light bulb going off, mm-hmm. and you can see that the science is helping people to understand it in a new way and in a way that's really internalized. And I often look out and I can tell you, you know, 40% of people are wiping tears because it's as if the science of this last decade, which has been a golden watershed era in neuroscience and immunology and trauma research, it's as if they're starting to re-see everything that's happened to them across their entire lifespan and who they are now and how they might be held back in the lives that they're living and not yet be who they want to be, and maybe the way they're raising kids or the way they're feeling, and understanding this biology of stress and this in this book, The Angel and the Assassin, this little cell that is really linked physical and mental health, you know, that's just completely rewriting the field of neuroscience. You know, textbooks are being rewritten. So to see those light bulbs go off is very gratifying. And yes, to talk to people afterwards and hear their stories, you know, as a listener and a storyteller, I see people suffering first. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's just awesome. Now, as I look at the cover of this book, and I love the title, but where in the world, though, did you get that, and how did that come about with what the topic of the book is about? How does all that play into where this is the title of the book? The subtitle kind of goes into more detail, but The Angel and the Assassin. Tell me how you came up with that.
Well, really, the past 10 years have just been a series of discoveries that overturned everything we thought we knew about the brain and how the brain interacts with the world around us. So just to set the stage before I answer that, we have, since the time of Descartes, you know, the philosopher 300 years ago who came up with this idea of mind-body dualism, medicine, psychiatry, the trauma world have all worked under the organizing principle that the body and brain function as church and state entities. And by that, what I mean is that certain facts of anatomy have also contributed to this idea. Facts of anatomy like the blood-brain barrier, which is this dense constellation of cells at the back of the brain that's thought to keep any kind of chronic inflammatory factors in the body, technically what we call cytokines, these immune molecules, from rising up into the brain. And so that has led to this idea that technically what neuroscientists call the brain being immune privileged. So we know that the immune system rules every organ of the body, and now we have discovered through the revelations around one tiny cell that the brain is also functioning as an immune system. And I'll back up and explain this so that I answer your question, The Angel and the Assassin, where did I get that title? But one of the most mind-blowing discoveries of the past 100 years has revolved around a tiny little cell in the brain. And I'm going to tell you, remember this name, microglia.
Microglia. Okay.
Microglia are little tiny cells that we discovered only a few years ago break off from our immune cells during early development and rise into the brain. Now, remember, I'm saying these are immune cells that rise into the brain, which is an organ that all of science has agreed categorically did not have an immune function, right? So these little cells are in the brain, and about 7 years ago, a young researcher at Harvard and her postdoc began to look at these microglial cells more carefully. No one knew that they were immune cells, and they had long been thought to be the most boring cell in the human body. They were dubbed the housekeeper cells. And they were thought to just cater to the needs of other cells in the brain, namely neurons, the way that an entourage caters to the needs of a movie star. They also irritated researchers a lot. They irritated researchers because they contaminated petri dishes. So researchers are trying to do other cool things and work with neurons and myelin in the brain, and they get these little microglia cells in their petri dishes, and they have to throw these petri dishes out. So let's put this together to back up. The brain is immune privileged. There's no immune function in the brain. That's the idea. Because of the blood-brain barrier, and because anatomically also you have a skull on the brain, so the brain can't really swell up, which is what the immune system does when it's at working really hard. So this assumption, the brain is immune-privileged. This assumption that this little cell that was first noted in the 1920s is boring and doesn't do very much led to researchers completely missing that there was this cell in the brain called microglia that actually links both physical and mental health. And when this little white blood cell of the brain called microglia is overtaxed, when it is stimulated by environmental insults, and by those we can include chronic environmental stressors, trauma, adverse childhood experiences, pathogens, infections, and chemicals and toxins in the environment and in the body. Just like our immune cells in our body can be overtaxed, and our immune system in our body can go into overdrive, leading to chronic inflammation, these little microglia cells in the brain can also become overactivated, and when they do, they start to target and attack healthy and needed and necessary brain synapses, eating away at the synapses that give us our mental stamina, our hope, our joy, our clarity of mind. So this resolves a very long-standing mystery in medicine, which is that we've known for a long time that kids who go through a lot of trauma, that they show some atrophy in important areas of the brain. They show on brain scans a lack of connectivity in areas of the brain that we associate with depression and anxiety and the default mode network and, you know, and behavior and perception and interpretation of the world. So we've known that. That's really, you know, 20 years of research of brain scans of kids who suffered maltreatment, trauma, and abuse. And we've also known for a good 12 to 14 years, brain scans have shown us that in individuals who have disorders like OCD, depression, Alzheimer's, cognitive decline, anxiety disorders, bipolar, schizophrenia, that we also see a loss of synaptic connectivity in the connectome of the brain between important areas. But no one has understood how that happened or why that happened. And this little cell connects all of the dots between our understanding of trauma affecting the brain, our understanding of why we see a loss of synapses in individuals with mood disorders and anxiety disorders and other psychiatric conditions and neurocognitive disorders like Alzheimer's. And it completely rewrites our thought that the brain and body function as church and state entities. So I set out to tell this scientific detective story of how researchers first came to look at this little cell, which can act as both the angel of the brain. Remember, it repairs synapses, it caters to neurons, but it can also be, when overactivated, it can act as the brain's blind assassin.
Wow. That is unbelievable. We're going to take our first break now, but I need a break just to take all this in. The amount of information that you just poured out is literally earth-shattering to what the impact that means on the future of medicine, and this is absolutely fascinating. I want to dig a little deeper on the other side of this break. We got to take our first commercial break, and we'll be right back with Donna and this awesome book, The Angel and the Assassin. Be right back.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back, and to Breaking the Silence. We have just been listening to Donna Jackson Nakazawa and talking about her latest book, The Angel and the Assassin, The Tiny Brain Cell That Changed the Course of Medicine. And Donna, I can't tell you the amount of information that you gave is just really unbelievable. How did all these doctors and researchers and science itself miss the important role of this microglia cell?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and certainly one that I set out to answer. And it turned out that when Spanish neuroscientists, the field of neuroscience really began in Spain, and Spanish neuroscientists looked at this cell in the 1920s, and they just thought that it, now, to be completely fair, we did not have great tools to look into the brain, with high resolution density the way that we've had in the past 7 or 8 years. So that is one reason why we missed it. We didn't have the tools to really see what this brain cell was up to. But when neuroscientists just dubbed it this boring housekeeper, nobody really took a second look. An assumption was made based on this idea that this scientific dogma that had been passed down for centuries, that the brain doesn't have an immune function, and everyone just went with it. No one took a closer look at this cell. And another reason is because the idea that the way in which we viewed psychiatric conditions, right, is that psychiatric conditions are conditions that happen that are not influenced by physical health. The idea and the stigmatizing of disorders of the mind has been around this idea in terms of historically, and of course this is a wrong idea, that, you know, there's just something wrong with that person. Mm-hmm. So all of these different ideas converge to keep people from looking at the brain more closely and at these cells more closely. And again, as I said, this idea that the blood-brain barrier keeps immune cells from rising up from the body into the brain, to have this whole list of assumptions that were taught in medical school. And as I said, medical textbooks are being rewritten right now. Like, if you picked one up right now, it would still tell you the brain is immune privileged. But I can tell you, I just did a talk at Harvard with a researcher, and everyone knows that this science is really causing the field to take a big pivot to to look toward this little cell as answers for psychiatric disorders. But it really took a researcher, and the researcher who really looked at this cell more closely for the first time, Beth Stevens at Harvard, she just had a hunch that it was doing something more than people thought it was doing. And a lot of things happened around the same time. Researchers at Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York took a look at its role in early development, and they saw that white blood cells are developing in the fetus in utero, that these little microglial cells broke off from them and rose into the brain, which I mentioned earlier. But what's so interesting about that is all of science is saying, oh, my God, you know, the brain and the body can't talk to each other because there's this funnel that doesn't allow immune cells to rise up from the body into the brain, the blood-brain barrier. But you know what? Immune molecules don't have to rise up into the brain because we've already got these hidden immune cells, microglia, and they're already policing the neighborhood. Now it turns out we also know, guess what? They signal through the vagus nerve, which goes from the base of the brain all the way through, you know, organizing and responsible for, you know, temperature, body temperature, heart rate, butterflies in the stomach. And the vagal nerve is really responsible for that fight, flight sense that we get, right? Fight, flight, freeze, or relaxation and homeostasis. Well, microglia communicate through the vagus nerve to our microbiome, the immune cells in our gut. So they're constantly communicating with our body's immune system. And it really tells us that the body and the brain are in this constant conversation. They are cross-talking. Microglia in the brain, immune cells in the body, immune cells in the gut, and it's functioning as one system, which means that if something affects the body's immune system, it affects brain health. And it means that if we are in a state of fight, flight, freeze, or the body is exposed to bacterial agents or toxins or pathogens, when we have that inflammatory state happening in the body, it is going to affect these cells in the brain, and these microglial cells can begin to spit out inflammatory factors and prune away at needed and necessary synapses, leading to a loss of synaptic connectivity in the brain and symptoms of anxiety, depression, and Alzheimer's. So it's just like, it's just mind-blowing. Like reporting this book, there were times I was just, calling researchers and going, do I have this right? And they're like, yes, you have this right. That's exactly what we're finding.
Okay, now, talk to me, explain this to me like I'm a third grader. So I really want to break this down because you said flight, fright, freeze. You know, I deal with that all the time with traumatized children that have been abused. And, you know, they go into one of those three options in life. And how does that work, that manipulates in the brain to where this new research can tell me how that interacts with each other during that.
So we've understood for a long time, and I'm sure you talk about in your talks, when kids are under chronic unpredictable toxic stress, right, when they don't know when the next bad thing is going, they go into fight, flight, freeze. In this state of chronic hypervigilance, we know causes the body's inflammatory system to get going, because across evolutionary time, we evolved in a way that if we're under a lot of stress, our body's immune system starts to kick out a lot of inflammatory chemicals, neurochemicals and hormones, and something we call cytokines, which rev up a lot of inflammation. And in fact, I'm sure you know the study at Yale where researchers looked at kids who had suffered maltreatment, and they found that this inflammatory flux, this, you know, kids marinating in this neurochemical cocktail of hormones and chemicals from this state of hypervigilance and fight, flight, freeze over time change the architecture of the brain and the function of the immune system epigenetically. In fact, it changed the genes that oversee the stress response on all 23 chromosomes. And so let's talk about what that means.
Yeah.
Our stress response across evolutionary time, you know, you see a bear in the woods, the stress response goes on, right? Fight, flight, freeze.
Right.
But then the bear, let's say, walks away, shrugs, he's not that interested in you, which would be a good thing. And then your stress response goes off. Oh, you know, you relax and your body goes into homeostasis. But we know that in kids who suffered ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, trauma, abuse, and all of those create that state of unpredictable toxic stress. You don't know when the bad thing is going to happen, but you're in this state of hypervigilance and you're just marinating in these stress neurochemicals.
Right.
That when that happens and these genes get stuck in the on position for producing this neurochemical cocktail, this stress cocktail. And stress cocktails are inflammatory by nature because in nature, across evolutionary time, let's say you did meet the bear. Well, you needed this big push of inflammatory hormones first to fight the bear or run from the bear, but also because if the bear attacked you, right, you could have a wound. So the body was really smart. It was like prep for these dangerous environments by giving you this big, huge rush of these inflammatory chemicals. And that can be really great if all of a sudden you are fighting a bear or you need to run from a bear. But when you're a kid and you're in your living room and you don't know when the next bad thing is going to happen, over time, it damages the cells that should oversee the stress response and turn it on and turn it off again. And it changes the architecture of the brain and it changes the function of the immune system in ways that we know categorically. Now we have over 2,000 studies showing the relationship between adverse childhood experiences and trauma in childhood and an entire range of disorders, you know, of diseases and heart disease and autoimmune disease and depression and anxiety. So this little cell tells us why, right? Why in kids who experience chronic, unpredictable, toxic stress, why is it that we see changes in their brains? And it makes perfect sense because if chronic, unpredictable, toxic stress and trauma in childhood turns on the stress response and those genes flip into the on position, think of it this way, like instead of a hose turning on and off with this inflammatory cocktail that's not really great for you over time, it's like that hose gets left on, right?
Right.
And as that chronic inflammation is building up and over time can lead to heart disease and autoimmune disease, it's also revving up these little cells, which are also immune cells, that they should also be agitated and that they should also be trying to respond. And our immune system is a really beautiful thing, but when it is chronically stressed, it makes mistakes. When it is chronically stressed, it can our immune system and our body can go rogue. It can cause inflammation and pain and autoimmune disease. And when our immune system and our body is overwhelmed, when there is chronic inflammation in the body, there is going to be an overactivity of microglia in the brain. I think of it this way. Our emotional and physical capacities really cannot be separated. Our emotional and physical experiences cannot be separated. The emotional is gradually going to become physical, and the physical is gradually going to become emotional. And this one little cell is connecting the changes that we see in the body of individuals who experience chronic stress or bacterial infections or you know, a lot of toxic exposures. and what's happening in their brains. It is one system.
Unbelievable. Okay, so now that this research has been discovered and Harvard and all these great doctors are, you know, to be honest with you, this is Nobel Prize award stuff. I mean, this is stuff that's going to be, and, you know, people may not, that's listening tonight is going to say, microglia, never heard of it. But it sounds like everybody in this world is going to hear this word and realize what the importance of it is.
Well, I want to say I wrote a book called The Autoimmune Epidemic, and when we put the word autoimmune on the cover 12 years ago, the publisher originally said, we can't say autoimmune. No one knows what it is. I said, no, that's exactly why we have to say autoimmune. So if you talk to the top 20, 30 researchers in the world, they're all working on microglia cells right now, and that's why I say remember that name. You may not have heard of it, but it is like a light switch in the brain that turns on or off disease. It is going to be the answer in Alzheimer's research. It is going to be the answer in depression and anxiety. And it is a difficult, sciencey word, but we all just need to get used to it. And we need to think about the fact that just as we've learned to take care of our immune system and our body, like we all think about that, right? We need to also be thinking about the health of our brain.
Yeah. And, you know, even a year or two ago when I was first started on the speaking circuit after I wrote the book, I kept asking doctors, like at Baylor College of Medicine, Texas Children's Hospital here in the medical center, who's ever heard of ACEs? And a couple, two or three doctors would raise their hand. I could go back now and ask the same question, and everybody will have heard
That's
it.
That's right.
Same thing with this, it sounds like.
Yeah. Right. And I've done the same thing, you know, talking my book, Childhood Disrupted, How Your Biology Becomes Your Biography. Sorry, How Your Biography Becomes Your Biology. And, you know, I would ask people 5 years ago, who knows what these are? 10 people. Now I would say 80, 90%. And, you know, that's why I wrote that book. I wanted to put my shoulder to the wheel, put that science out there. I spent a lot of time with Insulity and Robert Anda and all of the researchers to tell a story of science so that we could have it in our living rooms to make better decisions and to search for new tools in the toolbox of healing.
So what's some of the promising treatments now, since this is becoming discovered and well-known and researched? What's some of the things that's just around the corner that goes, now that we know about this, this is how the world's going to change?
Yeah. So, well, it's certainly getting a lot of attention in the research world. One of the really exciting areas is in Alzheimer's. They've been able to find, because these cells are so pivotally important in brain health, they also they modulate brain waves in the brain. So brain waves like theta and beta and delta and gamma waves. So we know in diseases like Alzheimer's that gamma waves are impaired. Mm-hmm. So researchers at MIT at Pikauer Institute, and I devote a lot of time to their research in the book, they have found a way to get these little microglial cells to reboot and stop being the brain assassins and start to take on their little angel job again and repair neurons and synapses so that the brain can repopulate with neurons. And they also have been able to get these little microglial cells to run around and clear up tau protein and clear the brain of the junk that is problematic in Alzheimer's. And they've done that by rebooting microglia in the brain, because microglia also help regulate the brain's electrical function. So just like your heart is actually an electrical organ, so is the brain, right? It's an electrical organ. When neurons are firing, and they're sending electrical impulses, these action potentials, which microglia kind of allow them to do and help them to do by taking care of them like good doctors, or can prevent them from doing by eating them and interrupting them, right? Wow. So by rebooting microglia with this little 40 hertz pulse, researchers at MIT have been able to get them to reboot, kind of reconsider, pick up their good job, clear the brain of protein, and this is now in really exciting clinical trials at MIT. So that's pretty exciting.
That's awesome. We got to take our last break here real quick. And when we come back, I want to find out from you, what are you hoping the impact that this book has on the world? And then I want to turn personal. What is your personal connection to the subject of this book? So we're going to do that just on the other side of this break. Stay with us for the last segment of Breaking the Silence. We'll be right back.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Well, just thank you for being with us now. And, you know, we're on the last segment, and this has just been some fascinating information. And I tell you, Donna, when you pick up this book, like at Barnes & Noble, number one, how's it doing out there since it came out in last month? Is it?
It came out 3 weeks ago. It's just been amazing. It's really medical schools are buying 50 copies. You know, organizations are buying 100 copies. It's just been amazing. I've done about 9 different bookstore and university events, and Amazon sold out. So
wonderful.
That was interesting. And they now have copies back in. So if people do want to read it, I would say grab it while you can. That's my advice.
That's wonderful. So I do recommend everybody. Now, is this a read? And let's just be honest. Is this a read that, I hate to say normal people, but the average?
I tell it like a scientific detective story. And I've heard from, dozens of people that they picked it up thinking, oh, this is going to be a tough read, and 3 hours later, they were still on the couch.
That's
and
fantastic.
Couldn't put it down. So, no, I tell it really like you'll read it and you'll think you're reading a detective story. And also I tell a lot of stories of patients like who are really trying some of these new modalities and trying some of these new healing tools and what happens for them as they go on this journey to try to find the wellness that has eluded them. So I spend a lot of time as a fly on the wall in clinicians' offices and with patients, you know, over dinner and cups of tea, listening to what they're going through. So as much as the book is devoted to the stories of researchers, but I also really tell their stories, like a narrative, you know, what are their families like and what made them want to do this research and take a look at this cell and how did it happen in the lab? So I absolutely write for the person who did not necessarily love science class. I write for the reader, person who wants to pick up a novel, but in this case also wants to learn a little bit more about how their body works.
That's great. You know, besides making your hope that it makes a New York Times bestseller list and the USA Today and all that, besides that hope and dream, and I hope it does. What is your ultimate dream that the impact of this book's going to have on the world?
Well, I think that it gives us a new window of opportunity for understanding suffering of the mind. And the fields of cancer research and even our understanding of heart disease and even autoimmune disease, they're all moving forward. And for instance, the field of cancer research is moving forward through our understanding of targeting and dealing with the immune system in a new and more precision medicine kind of way. And yet the field of mental health is stagnating. And in fact, we're seeing rising rates, frighteningly rising rates of suicide and depression. Yeah. And so I wanted to put my shoulder to the wheel and open up this conversation about the origin story of some of these disorders of the mind, which also give us these promising new treatments and interventions that patients just aren't getting. So the tools that we give a patient today who goes in and says, you know, I'm depressed, medication and talk therapy are the same tools we gave a patient 30 years ago.
Wow.
And yet, rates of these disorders are skyrocketing, particularly in young people. Mm-hmm. So the suicide rate in young people is just, it's higher than even in the Great Depression, okay? So my hope is that this new understanding will lead to, in the book I cover 12 different ways in which researchers are using our understanding of this cell in the brain's immune system to help combat these disorders of the mind. And I also hope that we'll help destigmatize mental health disorders. Microglia are game changers for mental health, for understanding of how mental health disorders arise, and for our ways of getting in and helping patients. It's a really exciting time, and I hope that by understanding that disorders of the brain, that psychiatric disorders are chronic inflammatory disorders of the immune system, we can destigmatize these disorders. Like, we don't think badly of someone because they have, rheumatoid arthritis. We don't figure that they're just not, you know, up to snuff or not a good person. But we know, for instance, that some of the medications that work for rheumatoid arthritis are also working in the brain to help dampen down microglia. You know, we know that fasting-mimicking diets, which reboot the immune cells in the lining of the gut, they're rebooting microglia. If once we see this cell as an immune cell, we can then begin to get at it and get at the health of the brain in the same way that we help to protect the immune system of the body. And I think that you can't fix it if you don't know why it broke, right?
Unbelievable. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Right? And so to have this new nomenclature, I think destigmatizes these disorders in a way that's really profound, and it opens up, I think, the next 5 to 10 years. And again, in The Angel and the Assassin, I write about all the tools that are here that patients are using and all the tools that are coming. I think we're going to see the most helpful era in treating psychiatric and neurocognitive disorders in the history of medicine.
That's unbelievable. As I'm looking out my penthouse on the top of this tower that I live in, I look out across the street, and across the street's MD Anderson Cancer Center, which is one of the best world-known research centers in the country, if not the world. And to think that what you're talking about and what you've written about is something that they're going to be using right down the street to be able to help solve one of the most devastating diseases that the world's ever known is unbelievable. That's just that's fascinating. I'm overwhelmed. This is great. Now, Donna, in the last couple of minutes that we have, let's see, we have about 8 minutes left. Do you talk about in this book your personal connection
Oh, sure. I do.
And tell me, how that all plays out personally for you in this book.
Well, I come from a family that is no stranger to autoimmune diseases. And I have quite a few autoimmune diseases, including a disease similar to multiple sclerosis, where called Guillain-Barré. I've been paralyzed and in and out of a wheelchair several times. And as I began to recover from a period of paralysis and learning to walk again, having a pacemaker and bowel paresis and just all kinds of things physically going wrong while raising young children, I also noticed that some things were changing in my brain. You know, I had trouble with word recall, and I cut up watermelon, and I struggled to remember, you know, what is that called? And I noticed, you know, I read Harry Potter to my son, and I think about those dementors, you know, those drifting sky creatures that are like ghouls that, you know, steal a person's happy mood and replace it with a sense of dread. I feel like, wow, you know, that's happened to me. But if the brain is immune privileged, as we all learned, you know, in biology and as has been taught in medical school for so long, if the brain is really immune privileged, well, how could it be that my having this autoimmune disease and these different autoimmune diseases is affecting my cognitive state and my mood state? It just doesn't make any sense. You know, I'd be trying to add simple numbers, doing kitchen table math with my kids. I'd be like, you know, my brain just isn't working. And I talked to my doctors, and I said, gosh, you know, it makes sense. You know, you're feeling sad. You know, being paralyzed sucks. And of course, you know, anyone would be depressed. But I kept this file, this little file I called Brain Flames. And around 2010, a bunch of studies started to come out linking MS to cognitive decline and mood disorders. Crohn's disease, lupus. 56% of patients with lupus were having cognitive issues and mood disorders and bipolar and even psychosis. Patients who had a bacterial infection so dangerous that they were hospitalized, 62% increase in reporting mood disorders and bipolar disease within a year. So gum disease, more likely to have Alzheimer's. And I collected all these studies, and I started to think, you know, what in the world is going on here? And then I talked with a friend of mine who's quite a famous neuroscientist at the University of Maryland Medical School, Peg McCarthy. She started to tell me about these little cells called microglia that were newly discovered to be an immune cell in the brain, that the brain wasn't really immune privileged. And she was so excited and gesticulating about these cells. And it kind of just got in my mind, and I went, oh my God, could this be the answer? And then I started to follow the work of this researcher at Harvard and another one at UVA, and the whole story came together. And because in my family, my dad died when I was 12 from complications from an autoimmune disease, and different family members have autoimmune disease, quite a few, and different family members have also struggled with, cognitive issues because of autoimmune issues and mood issues because of autoimmune issues. I just thought, how is it possible that these aren't related? They have to be related. So I set out to tell this story, and I found 10 times more than I expected.
Wow. Unbelievable. You know, I have a feeling, before I get to that, because we only have a couple minutes, is there a pill? is there a pill that they have designed or they're working on or doing research on that can actually be taken that can have any kind of effect on what you're talking about with these microglias and
well, you know, we have to be careful because, Big Pharma is rushing to try to figure out that magic pill. But we have to be really careful because we have non-invasive ways to influence these cells. And I write all about those non-invasive ways that don't have side effects. And I can tell you, as a science reporter and a journalist who's written for many newspapers and magazines, we have to be really careful with Big Pharma. You know, once they do come up with something to calm these cells, we have to go through phase 1, 2, 3 clinical trials, you know, blind, double-blind, randomized clinical trials. Then we want to sit back and wait for a few years and make sure that everything is really what we thought it was. You know, even with antidepressants, they have about a 32% efficacy rate. And, you know, they haven't completely lived up to their promise. So you have to remember with the immune system, if you add in a pill to change things, you could change one thing, but you could change another, right?
Right.
So I really, you know, in the book, I really followed patients who were trying non-invasive target therapies that we knew would do no harm. And I would always advise that patients start there.
Okay, great. Well, tell you, Donna, this book, I have a feeling, is going to just be lined up with awards.
Oh, you're very sweet.
There's just no doubt. The information that's in this, is there any other book that deals with this right now, or is this the cutting-edge book that's kind of just really broken through?
This is it. No other book has taken on the brain as an immune organ or told the story of the discoveries around this little cell and how it rewrites our understanding, really, of how we become who we are.
Fantastic. Well, I tell you, I just can't encourage everybody that's listening in to just jump on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, all of those different websites to be able to grab a hold of Donna's book. And we want to tell you the exact name is The Angel and the Assassin. And then the subtitle, The Tiny Brain Cell That Changed the Course of Medicine, by Donna Jackson Nakazawa, Nakazawa. And Donna, is there a web page that you have the book?
Yep.
Can you give us that?
You can go to DonnaJacksonNakazawa.com, and Nakazawa is Nakazawa. But if you put in Donna Jack Nak, you'll see my website comes up right away on Google. And also, I'm on Twitter at Donna Jack Nak, and I am on Instagram at Donna Jackson Nakazawa, and I am on Facebook at Donna Jackson Nakazawa Author, and there are always some good conversations going. And you can also read my blog on my website. You can go to my press page and, you know, read different articles I've written. And you can also order the book if you go to the book page.
Well, fantastic. And what I'd like to encourage everybody to do, because everybody's into this, like and post and follow and all that, go to every one of those for Donna tonight and just say, I like it, post it, send it on, share it, and do all of that stuff and just let her numbers go through the roof. And Donna, from the bottom of my heart, I just want to thank you so much for joining us tonight and sharing this information. And as you travel around the country and possibly the world telling people about this, may you always keep the same passion that you had with us tonight and just keep helping change in the face of medicine to the good. Thank you for being with us tonight. I appreciate it.
Oh, such a great pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And we'll hopefully have you back after you win a few awards, and we'll on your next book, we'd love to have you come back to and tell us how everything's going. Donna, thank you for being with us tonight. I appreciate it very much.
Okay, thank you so much for having me. Take care.
You too. Like always, we just want to let you all know, and I always end with the program with this every week. No matter what's going on with you, no matter what kind of pain, what trauma, what kind of autoimmune disease that you have, no matter where you're at in this world, as long as you're breathing, I want to let you know there's hope. There's hope. And Donna's story, Donna's book is telling us that medicine hasn't figured it all out yet. They are still trying to understand and coming up with discoveries and new hope that can possibly be there to be able to help you even more than what they are. So please hang in there. remember, no matter what's going on in life, there's hope. Hang on to that. Join us right here next week. We're going to have an awesome show next week, and it will be Dr. David Paradine will be here next week. But join us next week live at 8 p.m. Central each Sunday evening for another edition of Breaking the Silence. Thanks so much. Have an awesome week, and God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.